While Mildred handed out these words of advice, at another table, Carell was filling Ryan in on what happened after he went to bed.
The camstorm carried on for another 3 hours, and believe me, my friend, it got to the point where I thought we'd have to postpone the mission. But when it cleared with a speed that was breathtaking. It was as though the winds that drove the clouds together had suddenly reversed poles, like magnets. Where they'd been driving themselves together, now they could think of nothing but driving themselves apart. And the faster the better. Within minutes, the sky was clear and dark. Only the stars lighting the sky.
Well, that's good. But what about the Vills? Would they still go?
More importantly, have you had any signals from them?
Not much chance of that, friend Ryan. The rat interference is still far too strong. Nothing going across that air except rad blast and static. There's no way I'm going to hear from either of my spies this side of next week, if the strength of the interference is anything to go by.
So how can you be sure the convoys will be going ahead?
I don't know. Can't be 100% sure, I guess. But I do know one thing. Jorgensen and Hutter both need to meet badly. Badly enough for them to risk taking their convoy across ground that has been hit by a chem storm. If the ground hasn't dried up, then it'll be muddy and hard going. And maybe both of them will be late at the rendezvous point. But you can sure as hell bet that they'll be going. And if they go, then we go.
I reckon it'll take them longer. But if you work out the distance and the likelihood of us having the same problems as they do over the territory, it'll kind of even out. We'll get there about the same time.
That seems like a fair assumption, but how will it change our tactics? What are the conditions like out there?
Just as you'd expect. The desert is like a swamp right now. The earth has been turned into mud and quicksand, so we'll have to be careful as we negotiate the old tracks. But it's drying out rapidly. I figure we'll leave some tracks, but maybe by the time we get to where the rendezvous is taking place, we'll have been out there long enough for the desert to have dried out and not leave any telltale tracks.
Right.
After they had eaten, Carell had the room cleared of all the tables, and the Hellbenders arranged their chairs so that they were seated facing the one direction, the part of the hall where Carell had set up his maps and charts. He waited for the group to settle before beginning.
Okay, people. Now, I know y'all know about the chem storm and the effect that it's had on the terrain out there, but I have to tell you that I feel that it doesn't affect the basic plan. We can still get in there in plenty of time to mount our ambush and then to claim our rightful reward. And that reward is ours. We've all been unjustly exiled from Charity, a few of us from Summerfield, and we have been driven from our homes, family, and friends by the maliciousness of the Barons, particularly that cold-hearted son of a bitch, Jorgensen. When the time comes, I don't care who kills him, but I sure as shit hope it's me. We leave here in about 90 minutes, which should give us all that we need to finish loading and checking the wags. Thanks to Jenny and our good friend JB, we know that the tools will not be found wanting, so it is to ourselves that we have to look. Have we got what it takes, people?
Carell turned and faced the map he had pinned up on the wall, tracing the route with his finger as he spoke.
All right. This is the route we'll be taking. It's more or less direct, but as we get near the rendezvous, we'll be avoiding the more obvious tracks so that we don't leave any sign of our arrival. This is something that has become more of an imperative since the chem storm, as the land around here may still be churned up and wet enough for us to leave wag trails. There's going to be a hell of a lot more of them than there is of us, so we have to conserve our energy and hit them hard and efficiently. When we arrive at the rendezvous point, this is what we do.
He pulled the map off the wall and replaced it center stage with a hand-drawn chart that showed his tactical maneuver for the attack.
We form a pincer movement at the rear of these two outcrops, and as both convoys converge on the valley where they plan to meet, we close it down from each end, attacking them from the rear and hitting them hard. Then, before they have a chance to regroup, we come around the sides of the convoys, each group split into two, and hit them from each side, so they have no idea where to turn. And while they're figuring that out, we hit them so bastard hard that there'll be nothing of the scum left. We know that both Hutter and Jorgensen are attending the rendezvous because of the importance of the trade, so that means they'll all be carrying their best sick. We hit them and wipe them out, then the Vale of Charity is wide open. It's a simple plan, because simple is best. Make it too complex, and it'll be hard to adjust if something happens that we don't expect. But nothing's gonna happen that'll stand in the way of our revenge.
Fuck charity!
That's right, people. We've waited too long for this. Lives have been destroyed. People we love have been chilled. Lives we wanted to live have been denied us. Now it's time for some payback. We're hell-bent on vengeance, and we will have it!
Ryan and JB exchanged glances and looked around the room. The only people whose eyes weren't lit by the fires of fanaticism were those of their fellow travelers and Danny, who looked distinctly uneasy with the whole affair.
I hate the fact that the fucking Chemstorm threatened to ruin the whole plan. I hate it that the fuckers we've got in those fields can't tell us shit because of rat interference stopping transmission. I hate the fact that we're going into this half blind because of this. But I'll tell you something. We have rat on our side, and that's what's gonna see us through. Now let's get this show on the road!
Everybody began to filter out of the room and down to the wag bays, where they would pick up the last of their traveling supplies and gun the wags into action. The companions were among the last to leave the room. Mildred made her way over to Ryan.
I don't have to tell you, do I? Papa Joe is about as unstable as you can get, like a volcano about to blow. Trouble is, we're going to be right in the path of it this time.
Yeah, I guess you're right, but what can we do? We've got to roll with it for now.
With him in the lead, I wouldn't like to bet on our chances of reaching the interception point in one piece, let alone winning a firefight.
It's no use worrying about that, Millie. Ryan's right, we can't back out now. We've got to run with the pack and then play it by ear. The thing we've got in our favor is that we can stay cooler than them. They're all as fired up as Carell is. We've got to trust to our reactions being better.
John, I'm not worried about our ability, but we're not the ones giving orders. What I'm worried about is the few of us having to fight on three fronts instead of two. That could be stretching things a little too thin.
We'll have to see. We don't have any other option.
In the wag bay, the heat, smell, and noise were intense. The hellbenders were checking the wags, loading up the last supplies of ammo and grins, and settling themselves into the variety of vehicles in order to begin the trek to the ambush point. As the companions entered, Jenny approached them.
Papa Joe wants Ryan and Christy to go with him. JB, he wants you to go on the second wag with Mildred. I'll be in that one, too. Dean, you and Jack and Doc are to go on the third wag out. He values your experience in different environments and wants to spread you out to be as effective as possible.
Of course he does.
Ryan had wanted them to keep together as much as possible, and although at least they weren't spread across the entire convoy, splitting them into three would make it harder for the group to coordinate if they had to find a way of pulling out. Perhaps Carell had a notion that they might be looking for an out together and wanted to keep them committed to his cause.
Sure.
All right, then.
Jenny walked away to resume her last-minute chores.
Looks like the three wags we take are all equipped with radio.
Ryan indicated the wag with Carell already seated at the wheel, staring stiffly ahead, almost in a trance, and the two wags immediately behind it. They were of the redoubt stock and were military sec wags, fitted with machine blasters and anti-tank weaponry.
That's good, because at least we'll have a direct link if shit happens. We need to keep triple hard out there, especially when we reach the destination and move into position. If it's going to blow, I figure it'll happen when they get first sight of the convoys converging. Until then, we keep it down and wait. This is a situation to react rather than act, okay?
Sure, Dad.
The companions parted company, moving off to their allotted wags. Ryan and Christy climbed into Carell's wag. The Hellbender leader was at the wheel, still staring straight ahead out the front windshield, and didn't acknowledge their presence. On his lap was cradled a metal box, welded shut all around. It had no identifying marks. Ryan wondered what it was for. Did it contain some kind of weapon that Carell hadn't told them about? Some kind of mysterious old tech invention that he had found in the redoubt? If this was so, perhaps Doc would recognize it, as he had seen so much during his time as a captive of the Totality Concept Whitecoats. But upon reflection, Ryan thought the box was too crudely constructed, too amateurishly welded, to be something that was legacy of the pre-dark military-industrial complex. This had to be something that Carell himself was responsible for, and from the way he was gripping the box, it had some intensely personal meaning for him. The one-eyed man turned to Christy, and she knew what he was thinking. It wasn't a good idea to ask about the box. Her hair wrapped itself tight to her, and without him having to even frame the question, she shook her head almost imperceptibly. They took their places in the wag. There were two other hellbenders there besides Carell, Travis and Cy, who was manning the blasters and anti-wag hardware that sat at the back of the wag. The comps glowed green and yellow in the dark of the vehicle, casting a sinister light on Cy's features as he smiled a greeting. Christy wasn't sure that she wasn't imagining it, but it seemed as though the entire party was set on a suicide mission. As the one-eyed man slipped into the seat beside Carell, it seemed to snap him out of his reverie, and he turned to face Ryan.
Ready?
If the rest of the party are ready to go.
They will be.
He put the vehicle into gear, and it began to move toward the exit ramp that would take them up the necessary levels of the redoubt and out onto the rock plateau. As the leading wag approached the sec doors, Carell leaned out, punched the exit code onto a small console, and jerked a lever that would open the door. The door lifted, and he took the wag through and out into the chem-rattled morning. Ryan winced at the change in light. The redoubt's low-level lighting was replaced by the scorching sun, which hit them with no mercy as they exited the redoubt. The air stank of sulfur and a sickly sweet undertone that couldn't be identified. Instead of the cool, cleaned air that was filtered again and again via the air purification system of the redoubt, they were hit by the heat, dust, and chem-soaked air that came after a storm. The wag turned sharply on the rock plateau, gravel and loose shale grinding under the large, heavy tread tires and shooting over the edge of the rock table, down to the base of the outcrop. It was an extremely sharp turn to maneuver the large wags on the relatively small space and take them down onto the road that wound around the far side of the outcrop. In the second wag, JB gritted his teeth as he swung the steering wheel, the wheels locking as the wag spun on the loose surface.
Come on, you piece of shit!
He righted it, hoping that the rear tires would hold on the shale, and followed Carell's lead. Already, clouds of loose earth and dust were being thrown up by the motion of the wags, and it crossed the armorer's mind that the wags that came at the very rear of the procession were in danger of being blinded by the opaque clouds that were being raised. Carell had already hit the road that wound down the far side of the rocks. It looked a steep and narrow path, and he took it at a speed that, to Ryan, verged on the suicidal. The wheels locked on the angles of the road, the rear of the wag sliding across toward the edge of the precipice, back end of the wag waving wildly into space.
The one problem with being so secure is that it makes it a bastard to get down again.
As long as we get down the right way, not the quickest.
The convoy spread out down the mountain track, other drivers following JB's lead and hanging back from the front wag, allowing the dust thrown up some time to settle. It also stopped the spray of loose shale and stone from battering the windshield of each preceding wag. Although the shields were of a material that could not be broken by the flying rocks, they could still obscure the driver's view with their constant hammering. Back in the lead wag, Ryan and Christy both breathed a sigh of relief when Carell came out of the final turn and gunned the engine as he hit a straight trail on the desert floor. Carell, Cy, and Travis seemed to have not noticed the perils of the descent. Each was in his own little world, focusing on the firefight to come. JB, sweat glistening on his forehead, also took the final turn with a feeling of relief. After that descent at that speed, a firefight would be a walk in the park. Able at last to take one hand from the wheel, he pushed his sliding glasses back up his nose and gunned the engine, changing gears and increasing speed to try to make up the rapidly widening distance between himself and Carell. He sighed heavily, sparing a swift glance at Mildred. The woman pulled her plaits tight behind her, rolling her eyes at the armorer. Jenny watched them both.
You aren't scared already, are you?
Given the choice between a shootout with a bunch of cold heart mercies on one side and ravenous stickies on the other, and taking that road again, I'd choose the firefight. No better what I'm doing then.
Well, you'll soon get a chance to prove that, I'm thinking.
A similar conversation took place in the third wag, driven by Lonnie, with Kath, Danny, Dean, and Jack along for the ride.
Hot pipe! Anything's gotta be better than that!
You're not going pussy on me, are you, boy?
Not a matter of bravery. Shit like that is stoop. Get us chilled before we even get a chance to fight.
Yeah, pretty stupid to get killed before you even get to the enemy.
Whose side are you on, Danny? Don't you know fate's on our side?
It's not a question of sides, Lonnie. It's a question of meeting the objective. Isn't that what Papa Joe has always said?
Just you remember all that Papa Joe says. Make up your mind where you stand, boy.
Dean and Jack exchanged glances. Will they have to start watching their backs against the Hellbenders, as well as the convoys from Summerfield and Charity?